And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Dave, this week, we had a lot of motion by the Republicans in various states to revive a point of view that led directly to the Civil War, at least was used by the secessionists to justify their secession. And that is that the federal government doesn't have the right to tell the states what to do, that the states can pass laws directly in contradiction to federal law, and the state law would prevail. In other words, going back to the Articles of Confederation, in other words, ignoring the very section of the Constitution that makes it clear that that's precisely what the states can't do.
Yeah,
but they have to do this. They have to resort to this argument to justify what these Republican reactionaries want to do in relation to voting rights laws, gun rights laws, wealth, social welfare legislation, infrastructure, across the board. They're coming up to really the most extreme, necessarily extreme disagreement with the Constitution of the United States as it was written and for which it was written, that is to say, to overcome the Articles of Confederation's weaknesses.
Well, this is why I've used the term in the past, regressives. They are regressing, but they're not regressing just to the colonial time. Where this really took hold was in the antebellum South. John C. Calhoun, who was Andrew Jackson's vice president and resigned in order to go back to the Senate from South Carolina, he pushed this theory
overruling
the federal
nullification. He was for nullification. Yeah,
it was nullification. That's the word I was looking for, and he pressed that that theory.
In other words, the theory that the states can nullify federal law.
Right. There was an attempt under Jackson to do that, and Jackson threatened to come down with the U.S. Army, and they backed off. But 25 years later, we had the ultimate nullification called secession and the Civil War. And then the feds came in after the Civil War, and we had Reconstruction, and then the Southerners in particular tried to nullify that and were pretty successful with supports from the courts to enact Jim Crow and those things that lasted for another 100 years. So it's been the rallying cry of states' rights, as they use that term. You remember in 1948 when Hubert Humphrey offered the first civil rights plank to a major party platform that Strom Thurmond and the South Carolina people and walked out. And they formed the what was called the Dixiecrats, but it was the Democratic States' Rights Party. And that was the cry in the 60s with the civil rights movement, states' rights. And we're seeing that again, as you said, in a whole host of things. The states are telling or passing laws that they're governments.
But not the
don't
states
have
are passing
to,
laws. Only the Republican Party is passing these laws.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. It is one party.
Yeah.
In these states, wherever they have control of the state through the legislature and the governor, but they're saying that they don't have to enforce federal gun laws, and they're passing these rules on voting that they're trying to and anticipation of what the feds might do if they can get through some of these voting rights acts. And they're trying all sorts of things to get around what really, you know, if you look at polls, people want. I mean, reasonable gun laws are across the board huge winners. 90% of the people, including a majority of Republicans, a majority of gun owners, want background checks. Most people don't want criminals to have the right to buy or carry guns.
Well, I don't get that. I don't get that. If I know that the right wing are always saying that law-abiding citizens should be allowed to have guns. But if gun rights are rights, why shouldn't criminals be allowed to have guns? After all, criminals have the right to free speech.
Yeah.
Strikes me as counterproductive. You should be in favor, if you believe that the Second Amendment means the individual right to have carry a gun wherever you want to carry it, whenever you want to carry it, which, by the way, the Second Amendment was never intended to do, never was understood to do until the right wing forced it, that interpretation of the Second Amendment through in the 1980s.
Yes,
but if you think that that's the case, then how can criminals be barred from exercising that right?
Basically no restrictions on carrying.
Yeah, everybody should have it. And this fellow Cawthorn, the young fellow who got elected to the Congress
in North Carolina,
he said last week the reason you need guns is to overthrow the government, and that's why we have to make sure that everybody has a gun. This is not a left winger. This is a right winger.
Yeah, well, that's that militia movement.
Yeah.
But it's not the militia that the founders were talking about. They were talking about an organized militia by the state.
Yeah, right. They were talking about the thing that preceded the army, the national army.
Yeah. Well, these are but what they're talking about are these militias that wanted to go and kidnap the governor of Michigan.
Yeah.
And execute her.
And execute her. That's right.
On behalf of the people.
That's right. That's why, and that's who should be allowed to have the guns. You may remember that in the 1950s and in the late 1940s, the leaders of the United States Communist Party were sent to jail for the crime of teaching the teaching and advocating the overthrow of the government. They were not convicted of carrying guns or organizing the overthrow of the government. This representative says this is exactly what we should be ready for.
Well, and we're starting to see a lot of that as the FBI continues to arrest people who took part in the insurrection, and they start those several groups, the Oath Keepers, the Three Percenters, the Proud Boys, and as they start disclosing some of the things that they were discussing prior to January 6th. You know, getting back to guns, I want to remind people that in the 1960s, I don't remember in the 40s or the 50s, but I do remember in the 1960s, or studied in the 1960s, California had a very liberal law on carrying guns. And then the Black Panthers up in Oakland started going around openly carrying their assault rifles to protect what they saw as their people. And very quickly, Ronald Reagan and the Republican legislature passed a law restricting that right.
Exactly.
When black people assert that right, all of a sudden, things change.
That's right. And by the way, in Pennsylvania, you had, at the turn of the 20th century, exactly the same situation with the miners. When the miners went out on strike, the bosses hired Pinkertons and other gun thugs to suppress the strikes. If the miners tried to arm themselves, they were arrested for insurrection. So it's a tried and true tactic of oppressors in American history to make sure that the only ones who really are legitimately carrying guns are the people who are enforcing oppression. But the people who are being oppressed, they're not allowed to have guns.
Yeah. I want to, again, plug a book that I've been reading. It's called How Fascism Works by Jason Stanley. And he goes into a lot of this stuff. It's out in paperback, and it's a quick read, and it's what, unfortunately, I think we've been seeing here in the United States, and it won't let up. And of course, the pandemic seems to have exacerbated this, where people didn't want to listen to the authorities who were saying, we've got to be careful on this, that, you know, we want to save lives. And people said, no, this is about freedom. And it's up to us to decide whether or not we want to risk our lives. And of course, that's a truncated view of things, because the whole idea was not just to protect yourself, but to protect everybody else. And I guess this is the what I call the selfish gene in libertarianism, that it's only about each individual and nothing about society, nothing about anybody else.
But they don't believe in that, at least they say they don't believe that there's such a thing as society. They like to quote Margaret Thatcher. There is no such thing as society. There's only individuals.
Right.
But, you know, science has long ago shown that there cannot be human life outside of society. There are no rogue elephants among humans. If you're driven out of society, if you're Robinson Crusoe, you lose your humanity. So,
well, talk about losing humanity. We've got Mitch McConnell.
Oh, right, exactly.
You know, and who this week did a double. He indicated that he would again prove his hypocrisy when he said he would not approve a presidential appointment to the Supreme Court in 2024 if he controlled Congress, which is just the opposite of what he did in 2020 in a presidential election year, which was the opposite of what he did back in 2016. And then he, you know, as one commentator said, if McConnell's in charge of the Senate, he won't approve any Democratic appointee to the Supreme Court in a year that begins with the number two.
By the way, McConnell, by the way, almost said the same thing, because when somebody said to him, what about an appointment in 2023? He said, well, we'll see what the situation is when we get to it.
Yeah. That's it. Although Joe Biden was able to get through with some Republican votes his first main appointment to the U.S. Court of Appeals to fill the Merrick Garland seat. And that's Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, who's African-American and is likely to be the person that he picks for a Supreme Court vacancy because he made that pledge. But interesting, of course,
she's a woman.
She's a woman and she's black. And in doing so, he has now appointed more blacks to the federal appeals bench than Donald Trump did in 4 years.
Namely one.
One, yeah. So we have that. But then again, back to McConnell, you know, we've been talking about the voter rights bills. And this week, Joe Manchin came out with what he listed as his compromise, what he would go for in a bill, because he's already said that he was opposed to H.R. 1. And after he came out with that, Stacey Abrams noted that she could support this. It had a lot of provisions in it improve voting, making Election Day a public holiday, 15 consecutive days of early voting, ban gerrymandering, partisan gerrymandering, and liberalizing he went for voter IDs, but liberalized what a voter ID could be, things like that. And of course, as soon as Stacey Abrams came out for it, Mitch McConnell said no, he wouldn't support any bill. So that's put Manchin in a position now where seems to be rethinking his outright opposition to doing away with the filibuster. If you remember, he wrote an op-ed for West Virginia not long ago saying that he would not tinker with the filibuster. And then more recently, he came out and gave an interview. He said, well, maybe we could talk about lowering the amount, the number to 55 people needed for a filibuster rather than 60. or 55 needed to overcome a filibuster. And
you know, what really has to be done is, it's not so much the number, it's the base. It used to be, until Richard Russell, who was the leader of the anti-civil rights forces in Congress during Lyndon Johnson's time, it used to be that the cutoff for the filibuster was whatever number it was of those present and voting.
Right.
Russell made an amendment in which he made it a 60%, he lowered it, of the whole Congress.
Of the whole Senate.
Yeah. I mean, of the whole Senate, of course, right.
Right.
And
that's basically the same. It doesn't change.
It doesn't change much. Right.
You know, if there's 90 people voting. Right. If there's 90 people voting, the old rule was two-thirds of those voting, that was 60, you know, but...
Yeah, but it wasn't the case that they all voted. I mean, after
right.
all...
Right. So, as we saw recently... when a couple of Democratic senators didn't vote on a major piece of legislation on the insurrection committee.
By the way, that's, speaking of that, there's a peculiar vote 2 weeks ago. You know, there's the, what's it called, the Lilly Ledbetter Fairness and Paycheck Fairness Act?
Right.
It came up for the vote. It had to be renewed. It had to be voted on.
Right.
And it failed. And do you know why it failed? Because Kirsten Gillibrand didn't show up for the vote. She was the only one who didn't show up for the vote. And so it failed by one vote. And she's made her whole career on that law and on the law or her proposed law to take the prosecution of sex crimes out of the chain of command in the Army and set up a special right. judicial branch. Now, why would she miss this vote? I couldn't understand that. Nobody's asked her about it.
Well, I'm sure it's going to come up when she runs for re-election.
I hope so, because...
Or if they bring it back to the floor.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah, that is very weird. That is very weird. You know, there were a couple of things this week in the courts, talking about things that keep coming up for vote. The Affordable Care Act was upheld by the Supreme Court, this time by a 7-2 vote. If you remember, the first time it was 5-4, and then there was another challenge to it, that and it was upheld 6-3, and this one was 7-2.
And Mr. Alito, he got really incensed by this.
Oh, yeah.
He really got teed off.
People forget that he is maybe the most extremely conservative member of the court. It's close between him and Clarence Thomas, and it depends on the issue. But Alito has moved farther and farther and farther to the right, more ideological about that. I once argued in front of now Justice Alito when he was a judge on the Third Circuit, and it was an employment discrimination case, and I knew I had no chance. He was on the panel. But, that came up. And there was also that vote about from Philadelphia about whether the city of Philadelphia could prevent Catholic social services from participating in a foster care program because they would not allow gay couples to participate. And it was actually a unanimous vote. But again, Alito and Clarence Thomas and this time Gorsuch really would have gone much farther and said any sincerely held religious belief can negate basically any state action.
That does away with the secular state.
Yes.
If you follow that to conclusion, that does away with the secular state.
Yeah.
That brings you back to the religious wars that marked Europe in the Middle Ages.
Sure.
You don't get there in one step, but you can't stop from getting there.
Yeah. They, you know, we had part of this in the Hobby Lobby case. Which was a very tenuous, you know, connection to religious rights. But, you know, if you follow their reasoning, in essence, they could go back to Jim Crow. You know,
that's right.
An owner of a restaurant or an owner of a business said, I'm religiously opposed to serving blacks or Jews or Catholics or whatever. And that becomes unchallengeable. Talk about that is a true slippery slope.
And that goes hand in hand with what Rand Paul said on Thursday or Friday of this week. And he said, America is not and should not be a democracy. Democracy is not good. And he said, democracy brought you slavery. Democracy brought you Jim Crow. That's nonsense. It was not democracy. It was democracy only if you'd figure that the blacks had no
rights
to vote, which, of course, they didn't.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that's their point. It gets back to public policy doesn't and shouldn't exist. The state doesn't and shouldn't exist. Government doesn't and shouldn't exist, which means it's the law of the jungle. It's the strongest wins, the weakest loses every time.
Carry your guns.
It means the end of human society, and the end of humanity in the end.
Yeah. And, talking about this religion and religious fundamentalism, we've had two things came out this week about that. One was the Southern Baptist Convention. There was an insurgency by ultra-conservatives to take over the presidency that fell only slightly short of its goal. You may see more of a split there or people leaving that area.
Wait 2 more years and when they'll have another chance.
And we've been seeing this, though, in a couple of other areas. And then the Catholic bishops meeting have laid the groundwork to deny Joe Biden or any politician who does not do everything in their power to oppose abortion to deny them the rights of communion.
But what they really want is religious law.
Yes.
What they really want is that both the Southern Baptists and these right-wing Catholics are both saying that religious law should rule in secular society. That's what their point is.
Well, but only their religious law.
Well, naturally, not mine, not yours.
A liberal religious law, no. Only theirs. And
This is like the Modi approach in India. The Hindus should kill Muslims.
Yeah. Now, Ted Lieu, who's Catholic, came out and criticized the bishops, calling them hypocrites, saying, it's also church teaching to oppose the death penalty, and you're not making any rules with regarding that and denying people the rights of the church if they support the death penalty. And as a matter of fact, the Pope came out this and said that he would oppose the withholding of communion. It's an interesting thing, given that Joe Biden is far more religious than Donald Trump, who the bishops tend to approve of, and is only the second Catholic ever to be president.
Yeah, but the bishops, they're hypocritical. They're obviously pursuing a right-wing political agenda, covering themselves with religious obscurantism.
Well, you have that in the Supreme Court. You have that, with Clarence Thomas.
Yeah.
And you've had that in the government with a guy like Mike Pompeo.
Yeah.
Who gave that speech at Notre Dame and continues to give speeches along those lines.
The whole existence of the Southern Baptist Convention is due to the split by a group of Southern Baptist preachers who wanted to defend slavery and found themselves outvoted in the 19th century in the greater Baptist congregation. So they seceded and set up their own group, the Southern Baptist Convention, which differed from the Baptists of the rest of the country in and only in that they supported slavery and were finding justifications in the Bible for slavery, where the other Baptists said, nonsense, the Bible doesn't say that. Now, whether or not the Bible says that is another matter, but the point is they used religion as a foil, as a front to behind which they pursued a pro-slavery racist agenda. That was the whole point.
Yeah. We were talking about the states and their aggressiveness. Pennsylvania and in other places, but Pennsylvania this week, there's again a move by the Republican legislature who can't abide by the fact that they're being held in check by the Democratic governor. And they've decided to try to push a whole set of what they think are reform packages to get around their ability, their inability to override a gubernatorial veto. And they're talking about trying to get constitutional amendments to enact referendum and recall in Pennsylvania. At the beginning of the 20th century, referendum and recall were being used by progressives to get around conservative legislatures who wouldn't pass laws that the people wanted and were good for society. Now, referendum and recall tend to be used by the conservatives to try to restrict what more liberal laws have done in order to get people rights. I lived in California, and I know what referendum and recall is. Don't forget, they recalled one governor, Gray Davis, and they're trying to recall Gavin Newsom right now.
But doesn't this show you that democracy is a constant political battle?
Yes.
It's not, you can't create a structure of democracy. You can't avoid politics. Politics is the mainstream of life. There's nothing wrong with referendum and recall. But if you don't mobilize the people, if you don't educate the people, if you don't organize the people, right-wingers will use that to enforce anti-popular measures that help suppress and oppress people. There's no institutional way to get around it. The only way to get around it is to get people involved in politics.
Well, this is what happened in the last cycle, where the Republicans pushed through two constitutional amendments in order to restrict the governor's powers and emergency powers.
Right, in an election where you had under 30% taking part.
Sure. And it's a matter of organizing. And the governor and the Democrats didn't really organize against it.
No.
And as a result, it passed, and it emboldens the other side.
Yeah, and if you go through the vote tallies county by county in Pennsylvania, you discover that in many counties, the Democrats turned out under 30% of the registered Democrats, and the Republicans turned out 40 and 50% of the Republican base behind Trumpist and reactionary demands.
Yeah.
Well, if you ignore politics, you don't do your job. Get out of politics.
Yeah. By the way, when you talk about organizing and democracy, this week, there were 21 Republicans voted against giving medals to the Capitol Police who protected them.
Yeah.
And this is all, and what they've been doing is they've tied this in, this overturning of the rule of law, the insurrection of January 6th. And you see all this nonsense and these arguments that they're coming forward, that it wasn't an insurrection, it was just like an ordinary tourist day, that it was really an Antifa plot, or now that Tucker Carlson's out there saying, no, it must have been the FBI that instigated this. All these excuses, except to place the blame where it was. And, again, it's an undermining of democracy. They don't want the truth to come out. And that's part of the plan.
That's part of the plan, and
to control the communications.
If the other side, if the side of progress doesn't get organized, they win. The bad guys win. That's what it's all about. Politics counts. You can't avoid politics. If you avoid politics, the people who want to oppress you are going to oppress you. It's just that simple.
My political science professor used to call it the master science, political science.
It is. That's right. Well, we have a new national holiday, Juneteenth, which celebrates the end of slavery.
Yeah.
We had Father's Day this weekend, which
yes.
celebrates commercial carding and helps the post office.
Helps the post office.
I don't know what we have next week, but what we will have next week is debate and discussion on voting rights in the Congress.
Yes.
And more right-wing attempts to get rid of voting rights. A country that made its case to the world that the essence of democracy is voting is about to do away with voting. Fascinating.
Yeah.
See you next week.
We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place. This program is supported by Argosy Bookshop of New York City, 116 East 59th Street, just down the block from Bloomingdale's. Old and rare books, prints and maps, members of the International League of Antiquarian Booksellers, founding members of the Antiquarian Booksellers Association of America, members of the Appraisers Association of America, on the web at Argosy Books, ArgosyBooks.com. Check them out for books, autographs, maps, and prints.